You're listening to the latest preaching from Brixham Community Church.
I wonder if anybody here would admit to being easily distracted. Is there anybody? I have a few people that I thought I'm going to see. I saw Phil Callahan yesterday, so I'm going to ask a question right at the start, and I'm going to look at you because you are somebody that I might, you know, suspect could be easily distracted. It's great that few are willing to admit that. Anybody want to have a guess at what some of the biggest distractions are for us? Kids. Phone, yes, that's the first one. If you have a smartphone, smartphones are the top number one biggest distraction, perhaps of this day and age, but under the umbrella of smartphones, you have social media, so things like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and emails, because your default setting on your smartphone usually is to give you a bing every time you get an email. So you might be doing something and bing, somebody's emailed you, and it can be very distracting. You can turn that off, though, and I have turned that off because it was very distracting. One of the other biggest distractions is being drawn into other people's conversations, eavesdropping, that's what it is. And I work in an open plan office, and it is so hard when you're trying to, head down, bottom up, trying to do your work, and there's somebody talking over here about something that might not even be that interesting, but you just get drawn in. The next one is sort of related to that, but is noise. And that's kind of, I guess, a distraction that is not necessarily to this day and age, but noise. And again, working in an open plan office, we have work going on down underneath us. And on Friday afternoons, I don't know why, maybe they think not many people work Fridays, but on Friday afternoon, there was just drilling and hammering and like the workman's radio and all of that. And it was just really, I had to take my earphones out and put them on. The next one, so yeah, you're being drawn into people's conversations, there's noise going around, you're trying to stop yourself from looking at your phone, and then your stomach grumbles. Isn't that like when you sit down and do some work, all of a sudden, oh, I think I've got to make a cup of tea, or I've got to reward myself because I've done half an hour's work, so I'm going to go make a cup of tea. Oh, there's some chocolate in the fridge. Yeah, I'll have a chocolate. And then next, oh no, better be good. I'll have a banana next half an hour. So hungry, you could go your whole half a day doing things and not think about your stomach, but sit down and try and do some work and hunger suddenly appears. But this one was the biggest one for me personally. Multitasking. And I'd never really thought about it as a distraction before, but it's true. Because I don't know about you, sometimes I'm so busy thinking about the next thing that I have to do, or something that somebody told me that I have to remember, or planning what we're going to get when we go to the shop, that I only sort of half do the thing that I'm doing now. Or it just takes me so much longer to do. And I am one of those peoples, and it's not just baby brain, who will go into a room and go, what was I doing again? What was I meant to do? Does anybody else get that? Please tell me that's not just me. And it is usually because there's so much going on in here that I've kind of thought myself out of the thing that I was meant to be doing in that room. And I feel sometimes it's hard to be present when I'm talking to somebody, especially Joe, and I feel like I get this glazed look over my face and I'm going, yep. Yeah, but actually in my mind, I'm going, yeah, I've got to remember to do that. I've got to... Da, 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 da. And I really, really want to be present while I'm talking to him, but I can see that really I just can't stop from being distracted. If you have your Bible with you today, would you open up to Luke 10? And I'm going to get the clicker, if that's okay. Do we have the clicker? Thank you. Because we are going to read about, from verse 38, about somebody who got distracted. So it's good to know it's not just us. Okay, Luke 10, verse 38. And I've pressed the wrong... Where do I need to point it? I need to point it there, do I? Ah, oh, there we go. Okay, Luke 10, 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, I'm going to give you a bit of a spoiler alert here. I'm going to tell you the main point of my message right at the start, just in case you get distracted later on and miss it, because I know it's hard to listen for 20 minutes. But to me, this is a story about priorities. It's about prioritizing things that, yes, are important, but making sure that the things that are most important aren't forgotten about or that you don't get distracted from. Now, in my experience, this passage has been used quite a bit, and ladies, you might agree with me, in a women's ministry sense. I've read it lots in devotionals, I've heard it spoken on at conferences, I don't disagree with it being used in that way, but I feel like it really limits the story and what we can learn from it. You know, it's not about what kind of woman are you? Are you a Martha or are you a Mary? I really feel like that kind of is unfair to Martha, because everybody in the Bible is someone we can learn from, and she had a lesson to learn herself. But it doesn't mean that she's a wrong kind of woman to be, or, you know, something that as women we need to balance out and be a bit more like Mary and all of that. She's a person, and the Lord loved her and was close to her. And so I think we need to open our minds up and think of her as a person that, whether we're young or old, a young adult, who actually I think young adults really struggle with distraction, male or female, we can learn from her. So let's break this down a bit. So Jesus comes into a village. He's on his way to Jerusalem, and he's welcomed into the home of Martha. Now, at this point, Jesus is really, really well known. You see, just from the first 9 chapters of Luke, he's healed loads of people, he's driven out demons, he's raised a young man and a young girl from the dead, he's fed more than 5,000 people. So he's really well known, and people are seeking him out. They are flocking to him, and they want to see this hype around this guy called Jesus. Is it all true? Is it all genuine? And of course they see that it is. So he was popular, and you often see that he is in a crowd. These are just some of the verses just from Luke where it talks about him being in a crowd. So Luke 5:15, the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed. Luke 6:17, a large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, and from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon. And then Luke 8:4, while a large crowd was gathering and people were coming to Jesus, town after town. And then there's others on the bottom, just from Luke, that talk about Jesus being in a crowd. So he was out there, he was doing stuff, he was amongst the people. He kind of had this celebrity status, even though he wasn't really looking for it, that's what he had. And yet in the midst of all of this, while he's out doing in the crowds, we find that he consistently seeks time to be with just a small group of people and on his own. And of course, we know he wasn't just on his own. He was seeking time to be on his own with the Father. So you've got verses like Luke 4:42, he went out to a solitary place. Luke 5:16, but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. 6:12, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. And Luke 9:18, when Jesus was praying in private. So I want you to keep this thought in mind. Jesus was often amongst people. He was in the crowds. He was out there doing stuff. But he also sought time for solitude to just be with his Father. Okay, we're going to pick up on that point a bit later. So for Jesus, this really well-known teacher and healer, drawer of crowds, he's now coming to eat at Martha's house, which I think is pretty special. You know, he was close to Martha and Mary and her brother Lazarus, and he's coming away specifically to spend time and eat with them. And I can imagine for Jesus and also for the people who were with him, this was quite special as well, because this was respite. I imagine this was a time to kind of come away from the crowds, just to be with a small group, like friends, fellowship, eat together. And we see that Martha's response here facilitates this. So she opened her home to him. And other versions say she welcomed him. I like the message because it says she made him feel quite at home. Come in, Jesus. Sit down. Put your feet up. We're going to have some fellowship together, have something to eat. And so initially you get this picture of hospitality, of rest, refueling, coming away from the crowds together to have some fellowship. Now, practicing hospitality is a really great thing to do. I would say it should be a priority for us as Christians to be hospitable. And in the New Testament, we see lots of examples where hospitality is praised and extolled. So Romans 12:13, which talks about love in action, so doing things to show your love. And in the pre-service prayer meeting, Paul was talking about love not just being about spiritual things, it's about us actually going out and doing things. And hospitality is one of those. And it says, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. And 1 Peter 4:9 says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling, which is interesting knowing the story of Mary and Martha. So Martha's really doing a good thing here. She's being hospitable, she's opening up her home, and you get the sense that people feel comfortable there. You know, Jesus is there, and Mary, her sister, is sitting at Jesus' feet listening to all the things he's saying. Because he is this renowned teacher, he says some phenomenal things, and you know, he's done all these amazing miracles, and they've got a private audience with him. He's one-to-one there in their home and amongst them in their midst, you know. You would just lap up every word that he's saying. Think about any speaker, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a Christian speaker or somebody that you admire. If you had the opportunity to just kind of sit at their feet and listen and learn from them, you would take that opportunity. So this is that really lovely picture of a picture of friends sharing together and away from the crowds in a hospitable environment. But how quickly things start to change. We see in verse 40, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Now, it got me thinking, how does hospitality, which we know should be a priority for us as Christians, how does that become a distraction? Or even more than that, how does doing something that has to be done become a distraction? Because it actually says that. It says the preparations that had to be made. I mean, food preparation is something that most of us will be doing on a daily basis, and some of us will be doing multiple times a day. And so it can't really be that. I reckon Jesus knew food was pretty important, because in this same gospel, we see him having a banquet with tax collectors and the Pharisees actually challenging him and saying, hang on, John's disciples over here, they're fasting. Your disciples over here are eating and drinking. And he says, yeah, well, I'm here. And while I'm here, they're going to do that. We're going to celebrate. I'm going to be gone soon, and that will be the time for fasting. But while I'm here, we're going to eat and fellowship together. I know he thought food was important, because in this gospel, he fed over 5,000 people, and there were baskets left over. So it can't be about food. It can't be about food preparation that is this distraction. I think you think food is important too, thinking about your tummies rumbling and that lovely Sunday lunch that you have got waiting for you. The Message version goes even a bit further than to just say that Martha was distracted. It says Martha was pulled away by all she had to do in the kitchen. I get this picture now of Martha in the kitchen, kind of like stirring something, you know, like craning around the door, trying to listen to Jesus, but not really being able to take it in because she's got all these things that she has to do. She's pulled away. It's kind of like my multitasking example from earlier. There's just so many things to do. And maybe you feel like that. Maybe life sometimes feels like that. There's just so many things that are going on in your life and that you're doing that you're pulled away from the things that you would really like to be doing. Maybe Martha had just overcommitted herself, you know, this huge dinner she'd planned. She was conscious of the time. We've got to get the meal out. And she was pulled away from Jesus and from what was going on. But the King James Version takes things one step further again. I love this. But Martha was cumbered about much serving. Does anybody know what a cumber is? Not a cucumber, talking about food. I had to look that up. A cumber is a hindrance, an obstruction, or a burden. So there's no doubt in my mind, Martha's plan for this meal was magnificent. You know, she was setting out to give Jesus the best meal possible. The plan was great, but the reality of it did not match up with the plan. The reality was she was weighed down by all the things, by her long to-do list to do for this meal. It was burdening her to actually carry out this great plan that she had in her head. And it says that she was serving much, and her service had become a burden to her. So just as hospitality is good and should be a priority for us as Christians, so too should serving others. It's a good thing to do and it should be a priority. And there are, again, examples where serving one another, these are just a few, there's others, is praised. So Ephesians 6:7 says, serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people, which is ironic because she was actually serving the Lord. 1 Peter 4:10, same verse we looked at earlier, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. But we see here that Martha's much serving had become a bit of a burden. So she's feeling the weight of this burden, a burden that nobody else seems to be noticing. And we see this really hospitable, service-driven person get a little bit huffy. Like, It says, she came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help. Tell her to help me. Now, again, you'll have to forgive me because I'm reading into this situation, but I like to imagine what it might have been like. And obviously, I see it through my culture and my eyes, but I just imagine Martha getting progressively more and more obvious in her efforts to try and let people know about what she's doing. So she's kind of like I say, head around the corner, like, guys, I'm here, I'm doing the dinner. And then maybe she like bashes a few pots and pans around a bit like louder than, you know, and kind of like, oh, whoops, didn't mean to do that. Then maybe like a few... And then maybe she like sort of walks over to get something and goes, you know, because that's what I do. And again, as I say, I'm putting my culture and my eyes and everything onto it, but that's what I do. But then finally, she just goes straight in there and she says, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care? I mean, the temptation there is to go, no, she did not just say that to Jesus, you know. Come on. Don't you care? Don't you know who you're talking to? But I imagine, because I, you know, I'd get real with myself here, but I imagine if you're real with yourselves, there's probably been times, and there might continue to be times, where we actually utter those words or we think those thoughts. Lord, don't you care? Can't you see what's going on for me here, Lord? Lord, if you cared, then... ... I wouldn't be going through this, or this person wouldn't be being horrible to me, or, you know, I wouldn't be faced with this situation. I think we have more in common with Martha than we think. So Martha says, come on, Lord, look at all the preparations I have to do. Look at all this work that I'm doing over here. Can you just tell her, who's doing nothing, to come and help me? Because at the moment, it's all me. And I was listening to this message by Christine Kane a couple of weeks ago, and she said something that made me go, oh, yeah, that hits a bit here. She said this, she said, you will never really know whether you're in it for you or for the cause until you are overlooked. The minute you're not given the credit for something that you think you should be given the credit for, that's your heart check. What do you do in that moment? Now, maybe it's a bit unfair to put that on Martha. Maybe she really was just busy and flustered and she was more thinking, yeah, well, it's all right for you kind of soaking up Jesus's wisdom. Whereas if you'd just help me, that's where I'd rather be. If you help me, then we could both get out there. Maybe it was a bit more of that. But I still think it's worth picking up on this point in regards to serving and serving other people and doing things for God. What is our response when we're over here doing and no one over here is noticing? Because that is our heart check. That is that point where we go, okay, I have a choice here. What can I do? What can I say? How do I respond to this? And I was reminded of Matthew 6, verse 1, which says this, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. Because we know that serving others is good. We know that it should be a priority for us as Christians. But the service is our response to what Jesus has done for us. Okay, it's not about the accolades we're going to get or the accolades we don't get. It's not about the recognition. What really matters is serving wholeheartedly as if we were serving him. But what if you're like Martha, where she's really busy doing something for Jesus and he's not noticed? She's cooking this amazing meal. And it doesn't seem like he's recognized her efforts. What then? Well, she finally had enough. She comes directly to Jesus with her gripe, points out Mary's blatant laziness, and in all likeliness, I think she's expecting him to go, yeah, all right, come on, fair enough. Go on, Mary, go help her out. But instead, we get Jesus saying this. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, I want to draw your attention to the first two words in this verse, Martha, Martha. Do you know there are seven instances in the Bible where God or Jesus or a representative of the Lord uses somebody's name twice? You've got two examples in Genesis, Abraham, Abraham, and Jacob, Jacob. You've got Exodus, Moses, Moses, and 1 Samuel, Samuel, Samuel. And then in the New Testament, you have Luke, Simon, Simon, and Saul, Saul. Now, we're not going to look into the context of each of these, but I would encourage you to, because it's quite fascinating to see what's going on here in the life of these people and in God's plan for their lives. But I want to say we've got some big hitters here, like legends of the faith much, Abraham, Jacob, Moses, Samuel, Peter, and Paul. And then you have this example that we're looking at today, Martha, Martha. So why do we take note of this? Well, I think we take note of this because when something's said twice, it signifies that it's important. Now, for those of you like me who like words and language, when a word is used twice in succession, it's a literary device called epizeuxis. And it's used to show emphasis or to draw the focus to a particular thought through repetition. Now, in verbal communication, when we're talking to each other, it might be something like this. Now, I'm Australian. I don't know whether you guys think Australians exaggerate things, but I guess sometimes we have that reputation. Like, it was a big, big deal. Yeah? That kind of thing. You know, you've got to use big twice to just emphasize how big it was. And I've heard it said that if it's written twice, you might not even read it twice, but instead read it emphatically. So, Abraham kind of thing. You might not read it twice. But whichever way it is, for these examples in the scripture, it's showing us these were moments of importance. It emphasizes, I think, that what's going to be said to that person carries weight. It needs to be listened to. But really interestingly, and I love this, what I also found out when I was looking at what saying someone's name twice actually might indicate in Hebrew or in Jewish culture, I discovered that it is a way of possibly showing intimacy. I love that. So we've got importance over here about what's going to be said. Like, listen up, this is going to be importance. But intimacy toward the person which it's going to be said. So you've got Jesus saying, Martha, Martha. We know he's going to tell her something truthful here. It might even rock her world a little bit because, as I said, in all likeliness, she's expecting him to say, okay, Mary, go and help her. But he says her name twice because he is trying to express to her his closeness to her. The fact that he loves her, the fact that he's prioritizing their relationship even though he's going to tell her something truthful. And that just epitomizes in this moment Jesus being Ephesians 4:15, which is speaking the truth in love to each other. And I think, you know, that's something we can learn from in our own dealings with each other, isn't it? You know, to prioritize our relationships, but not, you know, undercutting speaking the truth. And the message says it like this, Martha, dear Martha. So Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. I feel drawn here to Jesus' use of quantity and number language. So he says, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Remember, Martha was cumbered about much serving. But Jesus is saying here, no, it's not about the much and it's not about the many good things. It's about the one thing that is better. So what's that one thing? Well, some commentaries suggest it's to do with the food again, that Martha just shouldn't have gone ahead and done so many dishes. You know, she made a rod for him back. Actually, she should have just served one. You know, she had this lavish meal in mind, but actually it just needed to be simple. And it could be a bit of that. But there was a commentary that really resounded with me, and it said this: the many things she was troubled about were, in perspective, needless, while the one thing she neglected was needful. Martha's care and work were good in their proper season and place, but now she had something else to do which was unspeakably more needful and therefore should have been done first. So hospitality and serving others and doing good, they are our priorities. They should be our priorities. Cooking lavish meals to bless someone, that should be something that we do. None of it is bad. But doing for him shouldn't be prioritized over being with him. And Martha had that opportunity to sit at the Lord's feet. He was right there in her midst and receive from him. I mean, he was highly sought after. He was this teacher and healer who drew crowds, and he was right there. And she knew he was more than that. And yet she was distracted or burdened even by doing something for him. Now, I said it right at the start in my spoiler alert that this was a story about priorities. And maybe you can identify with that thought that our lives are really full of distractions and none of them are inherently, or most of them aren't inherently bad, okay? They're just things that we are part of our lives. But what about doing for God, taking away from just being with God? Both are important, both are good, both should be on our list of priorities. But being with him is more important and needs to come first. And then the doing for him comes. Because being with him should be where the hospitality and the serving others actually comes from. You know what? We even see that from Jesus himself. And right at the start, we looked at verses where Jesus is doing. He's out in the crowds. He's doing things. He's doing good. But we also see that he seeks time just to be with God. And you know, for the first 30 years of Jesus' life, we have very little recorded about what he actually did. You know, we know he was a carpenter, he was working, of course he was doing good, but he spent a significant amount of time just being with his Father. Unlike Martha, we don't have to wait for Jesus to come away from the crowds either. He's right here, like he's always right here, ready for us to be with him. And maybe we just need to check ourselves and check our priorities sometimes and look at what it is that we're doing and make sure that it's coming from a place of being with him. Let's not let our service and doing good distract us or even burden us so that we lose sight for the ultimate reason for why we're doing what we're doing, which is Jesus himself. So I just want to pray to finish. If you close your eyes with me, that would be great. Say, Heavenly Father, thank you that you just love us so much that you want us to be with you and spend time with you. And just like Martha, I'm sure you were thinking, Lord, Martha, come on, just be with me. Just come and spend some time with me. And maybe that's your heart for some of us today, that you want us to be with you a bit more. You want us to prioritize that a bit more. And not take our eye off doing, because we know, Lord, that you have things for us to do, that you have a plan and a purpose, and you want us to reach the people around us through doing and through service and through hospitality. Those are great, great things to do. But Lord, would you just work in our hearts to help us to prioritize being with you, spending time with you, listening to what it is that you have to say to us through your word, through prayer, through talking, through relationship. And out of that place, Lord, would you flow the goodness of serving others and hospitality and all the other great things that you have planned for us. I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit brixham.church.